MyAudiobooks.ai presents The 7.5-Year Promise, what the new magnesium brain trial actually found, and who paid for it. This year, a quiet clinical trial delivered the kind of headline the supplement industry dreams about. A daily capsule of magnesium L-threonate, taken for 6 weeks, was associated with test scores suggesting the brains of healthy adults had become functionally 7.5 years younger. Within days, the number was traveling through the wellness economy's circulatory system. Podcasts, storefronts, subscription stacks, stripped of everything that made the study interesting. Who funded it, what it measured, and what it did not find. The trial is real. It is randomized, double-blind, and placebo-controlled, published in a peer-reviewed nutrition journal with the full data visible for anyone to audit. And the story it tells, read carefully, is neither the miracle the marketing implies nor the fraud a skeptic might assume. It is something more useful, a map of exactly where the evidence ends and the salesmanship begins. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. During our research into the primary trial publication, the unusual chemistry of this particular form of magnesium and the financial architecture behind the study, we found a story about how a single borderline p-value becomes a 7-year promise. What the objective measurements showed when the subjective ones glowed, and why the most important line in any supplement trial is the conflict of interest statement at the bottom. Section 1, the mineral and the marketing. To understand the trial, you first have to understand why this specific magnesium became a star. Magnesium is an essential mineral involved in hundreds of enzymatic reactions, and deficiency is genuinely common in modern diets. The supplement aisle offers it in a dozen chemical forms: oxide, citrate, glycinate, most of which are cheap, poorly absorbed, and largely confined to the gut. Magnesium L-threonate is different in one crucial way. It was engineered, in MIT-associated research, to cross the blood-brain barrier more effectively than other forms. Animal studies showed it raising brain magnesium levels, increasing synaptic density, and improving memory in aging rats. That single mechanism, the magnesium that actually reaches your brain, is the entire brand. The blood-brain barrier detail is not a footnote. It is the reason the product exists. The barrier is the brain's customs checkpoint, a layer of tightly packed cells that admits what the brain needs and keeps nearly everything else out. Most minerals cross it slowly and under strict regulation, which is why swallowing magnesium reliably raises blood levels but barely nudges brain levels. The L-threonate salt was developed specifically to slip past that checkpoint more efficiently, and the rodent work showed the downstream prize: more magnesium at the synapse, more synaptic connections in aging brains, better performance on memory tasks. If you believe the animal data transfers, you are not buying a mineral. You are buying synapses. The animal data was legitimate and genuinely exciting, but for over a decade, the human evidence lagged the legend. The compound, sold under the brand name Magteen, became a fixture of sleep stacks and cognitive protocols on the strength of rodent neurobiology and anecdote. What the market was waiting for was a properly designed human trial. The trial published this year is the field's answer. 100 adults, aged 18 to 45, all with self-reported poor sleep, given either 2 grams of Magteen daily or a placebo for 6 weeks, and measured on the National Institutes of Health Cognitive Toolbox, a standard IQ-style matrix test, reaction time, self-reported sleep, and an aura ring tracker worn around the clock. Section 2. What the data actually showed. The honest summary of the results is something real, surrounded by a moat of nothing. On the NIH cognitive battery, the magnesium group improved more than placebo on the total cognition composite, with the strongest effects in working memory and episodic memory, the systems that hold a phone number in your head and remember where you left the keys. Reaction time improved significantly, and the researchers derived cognitive age estimate, a modeling exercise that maps test scores onto population aging curves, came out 7.5 years younger for the treatment group.
The instruments deserve a word because their texture explains the results. The NIH toolbox is a computerized battery of subtests: card sorting for executive function, list sorting for working memory, picture sequences for episodic memory, each producing its own score that researchers combine into composites. A composite blends many measurements into one, which is statistically convenient and rhetorically dangerous. It lets a trial say cognition improved when what moved was a weighted average of subtests, some of which shifted and some of which did not. The Raven's matrices, by contrast, are a single, brutal, culture-fair test of fluid reasoning, pattern completion under time pressure, and they are notoriously hard to move with any intervention at all. Now, the moat. The Raven's matrices test, a second and entirely independent measure of fluid intelligence, showed no difference between groups whatsoever. The objective sleep data, the Oura Ring's actual measurements of sleep duration, disturbances, and restorative quality, showed no difference between groups. What improved on sleep was the participants' self-reported sense of impairment during the day. The two physiological signals that did move, resting heart rate down and heart rate variability up, are real and point toward reduced physiological stress, but they are also exactly the kind of surrogate markers that supplement trials lean on when primary outcomes disappoint.
Section 3. The anatomy of a headline number.
This is where the craft of reading a trial matters. The 7.5 year figure is not a measurement. It is an extrapolation. The researchers took the cognitive score improvement, compared it against the average rate at which those scores decline with age in reference populations, and converted one slope into a number of years. That conversion is legitimate as a communication device, but it amplifies whatever uncertainty lives in the underlying scores, and it quietly assumes the reference curves apply to everyone who hears the headline. One in 40-odd trials of an inert substance produces effects this size by chance. That does not make the result false.
It makes it fragile, and fragility is precisely what disappears when a number gets detached from its paper and launched into the marketing bloodstream.
The p-value literacy is worth pausing on because this trial is a perfect teaching case. The conventional threshold, 0.05, is not a wall between truth and error. It is a betting line. A result at 0.043 means that if the capsule were truly inert, a result this favorable would appear about once in every 23 runs of the same experiment. When a study tests many outcomes at once, as this one did across cognitive composites, subtests, sleep measures, and ring metrics, the number of silent chances to win multiplies, and the honest analysts adjust for that multiplicity, while the marketing never does. With dozens of endpoints in play, a couple of 0.04 results are not just possible under pure chance. They are expected.
Again, this does not prove the cognitive effect is noise. It proves the effect needs a second, independent trial before anyone should build a habit on it.
There is also the question of the counterfactual. These were adults who believed their sleep was bad. The group given a branded, brain-targeted mineral reported feeling less impaired. The group measured by an objective ring showed no sleep improvement at all. That split, subjective glow, objective flatline, is the classic signature of expectancy effects in supplement trials, and it is why the field's gold standard is the objective endpoint. Here, the objective endpoints for sleep missed. The cognitive endpoints hit, but by margins small enough that replication will decide whether this is a finding or a flirtation.
This content is for informational purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. Consult a healthcare professional before starting or stopping any supplement. Section 4. Follow the funding. And now, the line that matters most, printed dutifully at the bottom of the paper. The study was funded by Threotech, the company that owns the intellectual property in Magtane, which also supplied the product and was involved in the study's conceptual design. The lead researcher directs a contract research organization whose clients are nutraceutical companies. None of this is hidden, and none of it is unusual. Most supplement trials are industry-funded because there is no public agency queuing up to test branded minerals. But the history of nutrition science is unambiguous on the effect. Industry-funded trials are several times more likely to report favorable results than independent ones, not because the data is fabricated, but because design choices, endpoint selection, and framing all bend gently toward the sponsor. The contract research organization is itself a character in this story, and an underappreciated one. When a supplement brand wants human evidence, it does not build a laboratory. It rents one. The CRO recruits the participants, runs the protocol, analyzes the data, and delivers a publishable result, all for a fee. And its commercial survival depends on clients coming back. The researchers in these arrangements are often serious scientists doing methodologically competent work. The pressure is subtler than fraud. It lives in which endpoints get declared primary, which subgroup analyses get reported, and which framing verbs the abstract chooses. The result is a literature where the sponsor's molecule almost always works a little, rarely works a lot, and essentially never fails quietly. Read the paper with that lens, and the architecture becomes visible. The headline metric is a derived estimate rather than a raw score. The two clean nulls, the Raven's test and the objective sleep data, appear in the results, to the author's credit, but the abstract's conclusion leads with the positives. The subgroup finding that sleep improved in participants with more severe problems is exactly the kind of post hoc slice that generates the next marketing claim while awaiting a trial designed to test it. This is not fraud. It is the ordinary, legal engineering of favorable evidence, and the only defense a reader has is knowing it exists. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. Section 5. What to look for next. The replication question carries extra weight, because nutrition science sits inside the broader credibility reckoning that swept psychology and biomedicine over the last decade, in which famous findings repeatedly failed to reproduce when independent teams reran them. Small samples, many endpoints, sponsor funding, and media amplification are the four horsemen of that crisis, and this trial checks every box, which is precisely why the field's own rules now demand the second study before belief. The second is the marketing migration. Watch whether the 7.5-year figure appears on packaging and storefronts, with the funding disclosure nowhere in sight, which will tell you how the industry intends to use the result. The third is the regulatory temperature. Agencies have been circling brain health claims for years, and a human trial with a specific age reversal number is precisely the kind of evidence that invites both enforcement and legitimacy, depending on how it is deployed. The fourth is the deeper science. If brain magnesium transport is real and meaningful, the next generation of trials will test it in the populations that matter, older adults with measurable cognitive decline, rather than young adults who merely dislike their sleep. The fifth is the compound itself, whether other magnesium salts get tested against the same battery, which would answer whether the L-threonate transport premium is worth its price premium,
or whether the cheap citrate on the bottom shelf does the same work.
Each of these determines whether this trial is remembered as the moment a famous supplement earned its reputation, or the moment its marketing finally outran the evidence in public. And unlike most wellness controversies, this one will actually be settled by data, because the next trial is now inevitable.
Section 6, the broader pattern and open question. The broad pattern is that the supplement industry has industrialized the manufacture of plausible evidence, a real mechanism, an animal result, a branded compound, a contract research organization, a borderline human trial, and a derived number that travels faster than its caveats. This is the modern pipeline, and it produces not lies, but load-bearing half-truths. The defense is not cynicism. Some of these compounds are genuinely useful, and this one may be. The defense is literacy. Read the endpoints, check who paid, and treat any number with a decimal of years in it as a beginning rather than an answer. There is a second pattern, and it is about what we ask these trials to do. A 6-week study in healthy young adults cannot speak to dementia, cannot speak to decades of use, and can't weigh a benefit against a lifetime of unknowns. Yet the wellness economy converts precisely these small, short, surrogate studies into lifelong protocols. The gap between what the evidence can carry and what the marketing asks of it is the whole game.
Which leaves the open question: if a branded mineral can produce a real, fragile, borderline cognitive signal in 6 weeks, with the manufacturer holding the pen on the study design, what would the same trial find with no one at the table who profits from the answer? Until someone funds that version, the honest position is neither believer nor debunker. It is reader. The data is published. The number is traveling. The fine print is waiting for anyone who reads it. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai.
This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.